This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Oh, look, we've got an announcement. Lindsay's fridge died this morning. Anyone out? Actually,
yeah.
I've got a spare fridge in the garage.
Oh, really?
Do you want it, darling?
Well, next door, they have a fridge. Like, they've found a fridge in their rental house in the garage. So I think we're okay for the fridge. But we actually need a trolley. You have a trolley. Well, we're sorted.
You have to put some air in the tyres, though. I'll just
If you've tuned
it's
in,
girls and
you're, not listening, you're not listening to the Bunnings half hour. This is Detours on Joy 94.9 with Macca, Lindsay, and I'm Greg as well.
Anyway, yes, welcome to Detours. Lindsay doesn't need a trolley. She doesn't need a fridge. Everything's fantastic.
Oh, we've sorted.
All
there
done.
You go.
All right, we're going now.
Fabulous. But in actual fact, I have a little travel story, if I may start off. I think everyone may recall that a couple of weeks ago we talked about Auntie Glad's move to Queensland.
Auntie Glad.
And poor old Auntie Glad was slugged with something like $1,700 excess luggage.
Yes.
With leather and things like that. Well, Auntie Glad actually went to Toohey's Park in Brisbane, which I believe is a place where gay guys go to meet, you know, when they're feeling a little bit lonely.
It's a social networking site. It's
absolutely.
Bit of community outreach.
A community outreach area, that's correct. Anyway, poor old Auntie Glad has discovered that she cannot multitask because as she was walking along, texting somebody, she rolled down the hill of the aforesaid beat and the only thing that stopped her was a big old grandfather gum.
Oh, gum.
A gum, yes. A big old grandfather gum. Apparently, she's heavily bruised on her back. We all know Auntie Glad has a little bit of girth, but apparently she's, questioned about the death of quite a few koalas that landed out of the aforesaid gum. Yeah, so poor Auntie Glad. So the thing is, if you're going, and apparently some queen in the background just screamed, "Are you all right, love?" And that was all she heard.
And do you know who's going to be talking to us just before one? Jodie's on her way down to the drop bear capital of Melbourne, which is actually not in Melbourne. It's Phillip Island. She's
really?
Down to see the fairy penguins, I think.
Is she?
Oh, it's very gay.
I have to break with tradition because I promised I would do this. I have to send a cheerio to Gav and Bev and Dean. Dallas Fort Worth!
There you go.
There you go. I know they're listening in. Especially.
Very good. Now, our special guest today
makes
a return to Melbourne. Now, Daniel, years ago,
he looks like Adam Elliott, doesn't he?
He does,
he does
too.
A little, yeah.
Mm. Actually, he looks like
Harvey. You sure it's not Adam?
That could be a good thing.
Well, actually, he looks like you.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
That voice is Daniel Taylor, the Daniel Taylor, who years ago was one of the fabulous volunteers at VAC GMHC on the Beats Project, weren't you, Dan?
Yes.
I was indeed, and we had a lot of fun times back then, you and I.
We did a lot of great work out in the shrubs, talking about HIV and preventive behaviours and really interesting stuff, didn't we? But that's not why you're here today.
No.
Dan's a man that travels around Australia doing some great stuff around issues of mental health in particular, bipolar, and we're going to unpack some of your experiences doing that and what drives you and what your passions are and how you prepare yourself to travel around Australia.
And look at the lovely, how he's got his notes. He's got a little pile there.
I know.
That's very, tell us about that. What does that tell you about someone?
Well, that just reminds me that if I've got any little points to make to actually keep myself on track and when I'm talking on radio, not to just draw it out forever. So I've got to keep it short and punchy. Right.
You know, if Lindsay sneezes, they're gone. Like,
now, today's a big day in Melbourne because we've...
In fact, love.
Right across Australia, it's the lead up to Monday, which is Monday, is the International Day Against Homophobia.
Now, we do have the Equal Love Rally. Is it Equal Love or is it called something else?
Oh, I think it's Equal Love.
That'll do. Anyway, 1 o'clock at the State Library, corner of Swanston and Latrobe. You know, the bit where the thing comes out of the footpath looks a bit strange. Up there, Cerian McKellen is speaking, Bronnie Pike is speaking, Senator Sarah Hanson-Young is speaking, I think there are some others speaking. Tomorrow, as well, on Allegro Non Troppo, Adam Stobbs speaks at length. At length. Which is the only thing you can do with Eddie Maguire, because he gets paid by the word.
By the letter, isn't it?
By the letter. He's... He's speaking with Adam, and let me tell you, it's pre-recorded, yes, but it's a fantastic interview. And Greg, what else? I saw you out in the foyer here with a video camera and
Ian's in Melbourne. Sir Ian is in Melbourne, yeah. And we want to just share. We want to share a little bit of a sneak peek about what he's saying to Australia, yep. And here it is.
Hello, it's Ian McKellen. One of the best things about coming out is that you make connections with people who you may never meet across the world who are fighting prejudice. And it's in that spirit that I send my love to everyone trying to change the laws for the better in Australia. One way you can do it is by getting involved in Stop Homophobia Today. They have my full support, and I hope soon they'll have yours.
Now, what a brilliant man. He's all the way from England. He's on stage here in Melbourne at the moment with a complete gay cast, about four or five guys producing in Melbourne. And it's part of when you travel, you not only take part of you with you in your travel, but you interact with people and you embrace and you share experiences.
You do indeed interact with people when you're travelling. I was on the tram last night and saw this young guy, and I figured he was gay, but he was on his iPhone and he was on Grindr. And I thought, okay, I'm going to have some fun here. I got on Grindr on my iPhone, which I only discovered recently, and I sent him a message. It's quite funny because we're like sitting a meter away from each other, but Grindr's saying that we're actually like 273 meters away from each other. Long trams here in Melbourne. And so I promised him I'd say hello to him today. But that's an idea of just travelling around. You just find random people, and that if you want to know who's gay or not, you just like, are they on Grindr or not?
But you have to be an iPhone person there, and that we can't say that because that would be promoting Max.
It would.
It would be.
But if it's Android, I'm still waiting for the Grindr application, Mr. Android. When you get it out there, give it to me, please.
Now, did you know there was an interesting fact about iPod? If you had bought one of the first iPods when they came out and they were $399, right? If you'd have put that money into Apple shares, that would now be worth, I think it was $39,000, that $399.
Wow.
Whereas the iPod you bought for $399 would have stopped working after 4 weeks anyway, and you would have had 15 replacements and then a flatmate would have stolen it.
Isn't that amazing? Gee, and I was going to buy an iPod. Thanks for that.
Or an old root.
Now listen, just after this, we're going to come up with Dan Taylor. We're going to talk about some more. We'll unpack and start to get to find out who this man is from Adelaide, who actually, he and Bronnie Pike had this really interesting discussion in the lift just before about being Adelaide people, and they knew each other's street, and it was quite incestuous, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll have to explain how that happens in Adelaide.
I think it happens the same every week, Greg.
Everyone knows the way to my place.
In Adelaide.
Yeah, we know that. We know that.
You're here on Detours on Joy 94.9 with Lindsay Macker. Detours with Macca, Lindsay and Greg, and that was a beautiful track. Dan, what was that?
That was Hanson, as in Mbop Hanson. This is one of their most recent albums, and obviously they're in their 20s now. And it's actually, there's a segue here into knowing you, because when I was working with you on the over at VAC as a volunteer, I made a friend there, and we went over to see Hanson when they came out the first time when Mbop was big at Southland, and there were like 5,000 people crammed into the car park there to see Hanson, and they're all teenage girls, they're all screaming so loud you couldn't actually hear Hanson perform. And then a couple of years ago I got to see Hanson when they came here again on this tour that song's from,
yeah.
And I discovered they actually all sing rather than just Taylor. And I also discovered that when you whack an $80 price tag on the tickets, that the girls will actually shut up when they're singing and you actually hear the songs.
Never shuts Macca up, though.
We must remember
what's
that, Macca.
What's Hanson?
Hanson's a...
Is my microphone on?
Yeah, you're always on.
Is it?
Yeah. Strange in here.
Hanson was a team group, but they've...
That's right.
But they do a little bit more. I mean, they came from some devout sort of fundamentalist Christian backgrounds, didn't they?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, but I think they're blossoming out.
Oh, that'd be why
out.
I don't
There's
know.
There's a bit of a coming out. Now, Dan...
I'm not a priest.
Yeah, we're only interested in the demonic, Macca.
Dan Taylor, you do travel around Australia. What do you do? Tell us a bit about who you are and what you do around Australia.
Well, I travel around Australia, and there's two areas I, I speak on. I'm a writer and a speaker, and I travel around. I talk about mental health, particularly bipolar disorder, and I also talk about personal improvement.
Personal improvement and bipolar mental health.
The same, like...
How do you pull them together? How
I pull them together very easily because I took personal improvement methods and combined them into a way of staying well long term, and now I've had bipolar... The first 5 years I had bipolar disorder, I was manic four times and needed to go to hospital. In the last 9 years, I've stayed well. I haven't had a manic or a depressive episode that's needed me to go to hospital, which completely mucks the trend, because on average a person has eight episodes over a 10-year period, and I've now, you know, I now know how to stay well indefinitely.
And you've broken that cycle, that unknowing cycle.
Yes.
Linz, have you come across people that have had that journey as well in your career?
Absolutely. And one of my friends in particular, I remember a few years ago, was absolutely convinced that her house was going to burn down. And it was terrible because we knew that her house wasn't going to burn down, but wherever we were, she had to leave early because her house was going to burn down. And we acknowledged that, you know, she was having some type of episode. But it is very difficult, I find, that as somebody that doesn't know a lot about mental health, and I think that I'm sure that there would be courses or something out there for friends of people with bipolar or schizophrenia or any one of those issues, to know exactly what to do and what the pointers are when they are entering into an episode. Mm. Do you do anything like that? Or
I do indeed, and that comes back to Greg again, because when I'm talking about that specifically, I actually talk about Greg in my talks. Because while I was volunteering at VAC, I had a manic episode, and I rocked up at VAC with my mother and a hapless friend in tow with a big butcher's knife, because I was paranoid that, you know, we had people out to get us and everything.
Yeah.
And I rocked up at the VAC. Greg is perfect in knowing how to handle that. He wasn't confrontational. He's not like, you're sick, that behavior's inappropriate or anything, which is entirely the wrong thing to do when someone's unwell. Instead, what he did was he gave me a room, a little room to myself, and made me feel very safe. And I had access to the telephone. I could ring whoever I wanted. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to leave the room and go running off again, Greg would very sensitively talk me out of it.
Mm-hmm.
He made sure I was fed and everything. Then he organized my care to get me to the hospital, and he followed the ambulance in his car. I remember looking out the back of the car and seeing Greg driving my mother in his little car and everything, because I was in an ambulance. And that, so that's really, you know, I highlight Greg.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. But if you're travelling with someone and they're having a bipolar episode or a manic episode, how are you going to handle that situation? What can people do to support people when you're all out of your own environment? You're either in a different city, different capital city, different country, state, or overseas. How's the best way to handle a manic episode when you're in a strange location?
Okay, do you mean one that's actually like in progress?
Yeah, that's in progress. What's some advice for young players, for family or friends, or even someone going, well, let's tackle them first, and then we'll look at what about someone that's actually having the episode and you're in a strange location?
Okay, the first thing there is that with tackling. When it's coming up that you're becoming unwell and everything like that, the person with bipolar loses their ability to realise that something's wrong.
Yeah,
and so that's
obviously they don't realise.
No, they don't.
That they're having an incident, or that they're having, you know, that they're having it. So for them, this is the normal. This is their reality, of course.
Yeah. This is their reality. And just to give a little bit of brief description, bipolar disorder used to be called manic depression, and it ranges through the pits of depression up to the write my name in, give me my own constellation mania.
Yeah.
And that's what bipolar disorder actually is.
So if someone's if someone's actually starting to go manic and someone around them recognises that's taking place, could you give them, even though you're in a different city or country, you're out of...
Or even on a plane, Greg, or something, plane, you know, what's the...
What could you give them to give them something concrete to hook onto? Maybe it's you. Maybe it's the person with them that becomes the concrete point of reality that they can attach themselves to or understand there's a connection back to something that's solid. Is that a good starting point?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the key thing is not to be confrontational. The key thing is to be calm and everything. It's very easy to be impatient. As soon as you're able to deal with an emergency, follow an emergency, I would, if I was in a different city, I'd go straight to an emergency ward of a hospital. I wouldn't bother trying to track down the very elusive mental health emergency numbers. And to give you an example, in South Australia, the mental health crisis number, they'll respond to you within 3 days of you having a crisis.
3 days?
Three days?
Oh, exactly.
Well, is that three business days?
Yeah.
Oh, they're not a bank, right?
Yeah, they don't work on weekends.
And if you take in the weekend, it's 5 days. I find that absolutely abhorrent.
I find it as well, too. I'm glad I haven't been manic in Adelaide.
Because
well, there'd be no one there to see.
Yeah, you know, I'd be dead by in three days. I'd be dead.
Yeah,
you would be too.
I mean, this is. I mean, you know, it used to be called, you know, manic depressive, and now bipolar. The simple fact is that all governments haven't, you know, that they haven't stepped up to the plate, have they? In terms of funding and support, and that so much of the support that is there is voluntary or whatever. I mean, why is it, when mental illness is one of the biggest issues as a community we all face, yet, you know, it doesn't get, I mean, it doesn't get the attention. I mean, you know, they spend more money on setting fire to people's roofs.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little contrarian there, but I'm just speaking specifically about bipolar rather than mental health as a thing. But being a little bit contrary there, I'm not sure that more funding is necessary for it. And the reason for that is this, that...
More resource.
Well...
More recognition.
There's all the information is there, all the evidence-based treatments are there to prevent relapses of mania and depression with bipolar disorder. The problem we have in this country is that most psychiatrists and most GPs don't know what those evidence-based treatments are, and they aren't using them.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so okay, take government out of the frame, then
yep.
The medical associations, you know, the psychiatric associations, why don't these GPs have the resource? I mean, obviously there's going to be an element where some of them, you know, think, oh, well, you know, I'm in Montel, but I don't need that. Whatever, some stupid idea. But is it their professional organisations that aren't letting them know this?
I'm not sure. I mean, I read the medical journals, and the same things keep coming up over and over again that support what we already know works, and it works, and I've proved it works myself in my own life because I've taken that evidence-based treatments and I've stayed sane as a result of using them and know I can do it indefinitely. The problem is that doctors don't educate... A lot of doctors, I'm talking here, I won't generalise too much, a lot of doctors don't continue to educate themselves and they don't go, well, what's the evidence-based treatment here? They go on their clinical experience of what works, or they tend to think that if you just give people medication and seeing a psychiatrist, so that will help people stay well.
Okay, look, we're gonna touch on this again, but we're going to, I don't know, play something. play something else, but yeah, it's interesting. But then I want to talk about, when we do come back, is when you do travel around and talk about this, some of the interesting places you've been, but what people's reactions are.
Absolutely.
You're here on Dieters with Lindsay Macker and Greg and our guest Daniel Taylor.
Hi, I'm Sergeant Scott Davis, and I've joined the Stop Homophobia Today team. My game plan is to assist victims of homophobic crime to report those crimes to police, develop crime prevention initiatives to reduce the incidence and impact of homophobic crimes, and to educate all police on issues impacting on GLBT people, such as homophobic crimes. That's my game plan. What's yours? Develop one today and pass it on.
The only way to end the silence of homophobia in sport is to speak out about it. Show your support for the International Day Against Homophobia. For more details, see StopHomophobiaToday.com.
Macca.
Yes. We're back.
Dan, what does that actually mean to you, that song? You chose that.
Well, the reason I picked that song, I mean, when I came out, Priscilla was in the movies, and so that was the song that summed up my experience. But it also ties into, I've done a couple of trips with you back when you used to have your travel agency and everything, and they were to Sydney for Mardi Gras or Sleazeball. And so, of course, that song, again, was part of that. That was just back in the days when you go to those parties and they actually played music that had words.
Mm. I remember those days. You could sing along and do all that stuff. They were nice days, weren't they, Daniel?
They were nice days. The last time I went to a Mardi Gras party, which I lasted until 2 o'clock in the morning, there was no music that I could actually connect to. They used to have like three halls, and in each hall they'd have different kinds of music. So if you like the thump thump.
And they used to have the Dags Bar or something at Mardi Gras too, where it was really daggy music. Like, I'm sure that I heard Julie Andrews belching out of that hall one year.
Julie Andrews belching out of the hall?
Belching out of the hall. Belting out a tune, you know, Lonely Goat Herd or something like that.
So I got lost there. I went to the toilet and didn't make it out till the morning.
Oh, I see. I actually have a...
Some of those door locks can be very tricky, Lindsay.
I've had an experience in the boys' toilets at Mardi Gras too. That, you know, my friend said, oh, no, this toilet down here, there's nobody standing out the front of that one. And I walked in and there were boys having sex everywhere, and this lovely leather queen actually held the door. You know, like in primary... I don't know if you guys did it, but girls in primary school, there's always somebody to hold the door for you. He held the door for me. It was so hot and sweaty in there. My spectacles fogged up, and then he took me over to the so I could wash my hands, and he said, excuse me, and went over to this other guy that was relieving himself and pulled down his pants, and the rest is history. So I know what goes on in boys' toilets, especially at Mardi Gras.
I'm not sure anyway, I know, Daniel, what you mean.
I'll go on, please help me.
Now, I'm interested in that story too, but I'm interested in when you travel around Australia and you talk about bipolar and mental health. How do people, I mean, obviously people that come along are interested, but how do they react? Because mental illness is something that people don't want to talk about, and particularly bipolar. So how do they react?
Well, it's a perfect example, because this trip here to Melbourne, I spoke at La Trobe University, and I was speaking on networking, so it wasn't about bipolar disorder at all. It was one of my personal improvement topics. And so I let the audience get to know me a bit through talking. I was on a panel before I actually came out and said I've got bipolar disorder. And the point of me talking about it there was that I was making the point that, you know, I have got editors that I work with through my writing that are used to the fact that I have bipolar disorder, and that sometimes means that I won't make my deadlines, which is usually not the way to win friends and influence editors. But the way there, because they weren't expecting it, I let them get to know me before I shared about it. Whereas when I'm talking to audiences that are expecting me to talk about bipolar, I just gun for it straight there, because apart from having stayed well for 9 years now, I've got an audio book out called How to Master Bipolar Disorder for Life on the topic. I've had an essay in a book from Alan Unwin on bipolar disorder. I've got another essay in a book coming out from Alan Unwin in September on the subject. And I was runner-up last year in the Black Dog Institute, which is the peak bipolar... And
I love that. I love that name, the Black Dog Institute. I think it's fantastic. Because it was Churchill, wasn't
Churchill,
it?
Churchill, yeah.
That, with regard to his depression, called it the Black Dog him around.
Absolutely. And I remember tweeting something recently, and I can't remember what I said exactly, but I changed the name a little bit of the Black Dog, and I actually thought it was pretty cool, and I can't remember what it was, because it should be like a great thing to share.
What's your Twitter, if people want to connect with you and keep in touch?
Oh, my Twitter is... twitter.com/DanielGTaylor, so DanielGTay.
Now, what is it with Twitter? Bronny Pike this morning said to me, oh, Macca, I'm on Twitter. I don't get it.
I'm not a Twitterer.
Why should I be on Twitter, Daniel? Tell me, why do you reckon Macca should be on Twitter? Can I keep anything I say to 137 characters?
Oh, God, no. Oh, no, no.
You shut up.
You'd have to be on the War and Peace version.
Let's see, I haven't known you long enough, but yeah, I don't think you could.
No?
No. Yeah. But it's very good discipline.
Can I ask, Daniel, is there anything that's set up on either Twitter or Facebook if somebody felt that they were entering into an episode or anything like that? Could they Twitter somebody like you? Is there any system set up? Or, I mean, we spoke earlier that people don't know when they're actually entering into an episode, but would there be some code or, I don't know, is there anything in play? Because it seems important.
That's a good question. I don't actually know the answer to that. I know that I've tweeted when I've been feeling depressed and stuff and feeling down, or sometimes I've tweeted about those things and that. So they, so certainly, and I've had people say, oh, look, you know, come, you know, connect with me, you come over to my place, hang out.
Now, Twitter is a fabulous thing, but we've got online, we actually have one of Joy's most famous Twitterers right now down at the Equal Love Rally, Dean Beck.
I haven't tweeted before in my life.
You're no
good
Twitterer.
On you. Good on you.
No, but yes, that's right. Dean from Greg, Hide and Seek.
Greg, I'm down here at the Equal Love Rally, and I'm joined here by Ali Hogg, who's the organiser of the rally. Ali, how's it coming along for you?
Yeah, it's going fantastic. There's probably about, I don't know, maybe 800 people so far, and there's still about half an hour before the rally starts, so there's a lot of momentum. Everybody seems a bit excited.
That's brilliant.
You've got
brilliant.
Quite a lineup of special guests talking before the rally takes off. Perhaps you'd like to go through those with us.
Yeah, we sure do. We're lucky to have Ian McKellen from, people might know from Lord of the Rings, and he's here with the whole cast of Waiting for Godot.
The whole cast
is turning up.
Wow.
And we'll be handing over 100... They'll be speaking for a little bit, and then we'll be handing over the 100,000 petitions that we've collected over to Senator Hanson-Young.
That's a great effort.
It's fantastic. And she's going to be tabling that in Parliament. People might know she tabled our last lot of petitions in Parliament and it got voted down. But, you know, I think if we keep the pressure on, hopefully, you know, we've got double the amount of petitions we had last time. So I think that we can... You know, really, like, you know, get the word out there and hopefully we can...
Make a difference.
Make a difference, yeah, that's right.
Ali, we've still got another 20 minutes or so before we kick off, so we would encourage everybody to come down here to the State Library on Swanston Street and join in the rally.
That's right, and the weather looks like it's going to hold out for us, so you've got no excuse. Bring your outfits, bring your banners. We're having a bit of a competition for people with the best outfits and people with the best placards, the most creative placards. And for Tegan and Sarah fans, we've got some signed posters that we're giving away, so come on down.
Ali Hogg, thank you so much for joining us here on Joy 94.9.
Now, Dean Beck, before you go.
Yes.
Dean Beck, you'll have to get a Twitter account. We saw them down at Flinders Street Station. There were a lot of bemused interstate rail travellers who'd made their way up from Spencer Street and were down there at Flinders Street watching what was going on. Now, these people today that are with their banners and they've come from far and wide, it's quite amazing, isn't it?
It is indeed. And to kick it all off, we've got the lefty student unionists, of course. They've already created a havoc in the middle of the street, stopping trams and getting the police on their toes. So that's got everyone sort of warmed up already.
Now, you've also got the, I believe, the United Firefighters Union National Secretary there as well.
Yes, well, I asked our very own Doug Pollard what the firefighters had to do with us.
Big hoses, Dale, big hoses.
But I but I believe that they are representing the union collective.
Fantastic.
Well, if you see Paul Mullett, stick a little foot under his...
trip him up.
Trip him up, okay. And we'll listen to you on Hide and Seek. What day is Hide and Seek this week?
It's on Thursdays from 10 p.m.
Dean Beck down at Equal Love Rally. Thanks for joining us on Detours with our guest today, Dan Taylor.
Bye, Dean.
Bye-bye.
More great music.
Oh, it's fantastic.
The Weather Girls.
The Weather Girls. God bless their souls. Remember that the video of that? They were big and they were raunchy, Daniel. They were heaven.
I've been watching the video of that right here. I don't get to watch the video much. I've always knew the song for years. It's only because of YouTube I get to see the video.
Haven't you ever seen it? It's fantastic. All these queens coming down in their little red things and coats. And
surely they're not gay.
Oh, no, they'd be, they're
look,
straight.
Look at that man in his Speedos with a trench coat.
Yep, straight. Yes. Now, they're all straight.
Lucky it's radio, folks. You're here on Detours with Lindsay Macker and Greg and our guest Daniel Taylor.
And Lindsay had a question.
Did I? Which one was that? Which
Come
question
on.
Was that?
Come on, get with a girl.
Which question was that? Daniel, one of the things, I'm finding you absolutely fascinating because I think in the gay community that a lot of people out there that do have, can we say, psych disability or mental health issues, they tend to keep it very much to themselves. And then I've known of instances where, you know, people have met and then they've said, oh, look, you know, I'm not going out with them anymore. You know, they're a little bit too hard to handle.
Yeah.
How prevalent is that? How do you deal with that? And is that part of your talks when you go out there? And it's a bit of a multi-layered question, but do you address that at all?
Yeah, sure. Look, what triggered my first manic episode of bipolar disorder was when I was living in Melbourne and I broke up with my first boyfriend. And as a result of that, before then, I was quite a prolific writer, and I was quite, I was like a little protege and everything. And everybody loved me. Everybody knew me back then. And I broke up my boyfriend, and it triggered my first manic episode. And I did things as I was becoming manic that I absolutely, you know, were absolutely despicable and stuff, which I would never normally have done. And I always used to think that was the worst. But then I realized, you know, over the years, so I was actually not a very good person to be around in the lead up to that and everything. I was not skilled in being intimate and everything, and I treated my partner at the time very poorly.
Because it is one of those things, because we tend to sort of shy away from that, because, you know, we sort of sometimes gloss over and you know, like the people we were saying earlier, I have a friend who is HIV positive, that's living on his own, that's late in life diagnosed bipolar, that and he's totally unreachable, and he's totally paranoid as well. And it's just one of those things that you think, yeah, if this guy could have somebody in his life, not just a gay male companion, that something, you know, his spirits may be lifted in some way.
Yeah. It's not that long ago when I was on an international flight, and sitting there was a young man, about 24, that had a mental illness. He was expressing himself erratically, but he had his travelling companion with him who was being paid. It was a carer being paid to travel with him that had the strategies and techniques to bring him back in and help him have his trip. And he was able to then explore travel and not be stuck in his own environment. He got a chance to go and explore new experiences.
We just don't know.
And I'm planning some trips overseas, and I've got my best mate, and he does a lot of stuff with me, and he's going to be like my travel companion and stuff. Like, I've been stable for so long, but when I go overseas, I'm going to be in an environment, there's going to be like cultural clashes and things and everything like that. I'm finding it hard with one of my best friends is German. He's house sitting for me at the moment, and he's just over here for a year. There's a lot of culture clash just there, and that's Germany.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
But you appear so positive about it, Daniel, because I think you see it as the challenge more than the problem.
Yeah, well, I don't tend to think of it as a mental illness or whatever. I tend to think of it as a mental health challenge. But continuing on with your question there for a second too, because it was my boyfriend that, you know, because I blamed my boyfriend, I extended the blame to the entire gay community. And so for 5 years, I didn't write. I stopped writing because I was mainly writing for the gay press.
Yeah.
I stopped writing and stopped doing all those things, which just was soul-destroying for me because I wasn't writing, and that's what my passion is. And now my passion is also speaking. And I've discovered later that blame is one of the stages of grief. There's like 7 stages of grief that a person goes through. And until you get to the point of acceptance, you can't then start to take control of your mental health or any illness for that matter.
And accept responsibility too, I think, sometimes for your actions, no matter where you're at. Like, it's very difficult. But I have to ask, being a writer, you know, like all these famous writers that we know that have had, you know, either some sort of psych or mental health issues and things like that, it must help you in some way. Like, you must be able to draw on something that other people can't to get the point across.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't support the idea that you have to. Some writers say, oh, I've got to be manic to write, and they let themselves get into a very risky situation to do it.
Just in a moment, I want to explore where you've travelled to. You've come from Adelaide to be in Melbourne, and you're a writer, and you've been speaking to people. But in the meantime, someone that is actually not here and away from us that's travelling today is young Jodie. Where are you, Jodie, in the world?
Hi there. I'm at Federation Square, just about to head off on a day trip to the penguins in Phillip Island Nature Park.
Oh, I love those penguins.
Penguins?
La Penguina.
I haven't seen the penguins for some time, and I wonder, do you think they've changed in any way?
Well, they're missing you.
And the penguin parade has changed a lot, Jodie. It's you know, the visitor centre and the educational side of it and everything. Years ago, you know, you used to walk down this crappy old track and get your hock stuck in a penguin burrow. And
yeah.
Whereas now it's all, how are you going, train, car or
I'm going on a tour. I'm just waiting for some friends to meet me here, and they've got the tickets, and there's 4 different tour companies, so I don't know exactly which one we're going on. But all I know is that we're heading off very shortly, and we'll be doing a tour of Seal Rocks and the nobbies, and then back down to Philippa Nature Park as well to see the penguins at dusk.
Because you can't just wander down to the nobbies anymore. It's actually pathed and fenced off. Because when we used to go down there as kids, we'd go down the nobbies and the penguins would actually walk right past. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
You just sat very still.
I do recall that as well when I was younger. But I guess, obviously, with it being such a popular destination, we've got to conserve the natural environment and make sure that people can see without disturbing the habitat. But it'd be interesting to see what it's like now.
So how do you go about finding tour companies, Jodes, to go down to Phillip Island?
As you know, I'm a girl who never likes to pay retail, so we actually got these tickets through Half Tix at the Town Hall in Swanston Street in the city. So
When did you get them?
Last week.
Okay. Oh, okay. So sometime in advance you can.
Yeah. And so like you would with theatre tickets, some last minute sort of specials, that obviously you can purchase them through the companies directly, or you can actually get them online as well. But the prices are fairly competitive between them all. I guess they've got similar products.
Now, Jodes, before you go, Daniel's talking about travelling and he's a writer and a speaker about mental health. Your work, Travels Aid, is a nice, safe place for people to come and access the internet if you're travelling and you have some issues and you...
Absolutely. We often get people who are experiencing mild anxiety or panic attacks, or people who find themselves a bit overwhelmed for some reason in the city. So we offer safe lounges for people just to sort of help them collect their thoughts and have a cup of tea and then enable them to make their journey. And one thing that's quite unique as well is we have small restrooms which are designed for sleeping or resting. So we find as well some people who have mental health issues who require just somewhere quiet to be for a moment. That's very helpful. The services are available free of charge for people to utilise. And then some services people can pay for, and that helps subsidise for people who can't afford to or aren't able to for whatever reason.
Well, listen, we'll let you go. Have a great time down the Penguins, and we'll see you next week.
I look forward to it. Thanks for the end.
Bye.
Now, Daniel, thank you as well, Dan.
Yeah, no, I've got a quick question for Daniel. Mark rang and he asked, what's the difference between bipolar and borderline personality disorder?
Okay, borderline personality disorder, I don't know, because I only deal with bipolar disorder. I decided to be very specific about that and only deal with what I have the experience in, because I'm not an expert in any mental health stuff outside of bipolar disorder.
Now, next week, we're going to give away next week, listen to Joy next week, 5 copies of Daniel's audiobook. And you'll have to listen to Detours next Saturday at 12 noon to get that. Daniel Taylor, thank you for coming to Detours.
Thank you.
Up, we've got Peter...
Someone.
What's your name?
Pete Dillon.
Pete Dillon.
I don't even know Cravings.
Oh, my God. He's got Philip Sibley, Michelle, everyone else. They're all coming up.
This Terps and Tucker o'clock. Extraordinaire.
This is Detours.
Adios, amigos.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Estoy pasándolo muy bien aquí en Melbourne.
Oh, yes. We love being in Melbourne.
Yes, we do.
It's Svein and
Elkin
from Oslo and
Colombia.
Traveling all the way down to Melbourne just to be here on Detours on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.